Chapter 20. Alignment. Cut in darkness, and you are called a monster. Cut in starlight, and you are proclaimed a god. The Nocturniad, 11th cycle. They hurried through the subsystem of Strako Deem, moving through the ancient but well-maintained network of sewers, outfalls and storm drains that lay beneath the paved streets and refined avenues. Occasionally, light fell upon them through drain gratings or grills, and where it did, it was tinged with flame. "Why are we moving?" John asked. Narek had unbound him, but hustled him along on a leash of dirty rope tied around the Perpetual's neck.
"You heard the blast."
"It could have been anything."
"Tell me it wasn't."
"I can't tell you anything, Narek."
"Respect."
"I can't tell you anything, my lord," John Grammaticus repeated in a low voice. "This close to that talk you're wearing, I'm limited to virtually nothing, and I'm in pain."
"That is a shame."
"Tell me what you know, then." Narek came to a halt. They had just entered the cistern of a wide storm drain, circular in cross-section. Dark, pungent water rippled around their feet as they came to a stop.
"Some form of aircraft crashed not far from where I had you secured. The authorities of the city will be closing in. I can fight Ultramarines well enough, but perhaps not all the Ultramarines. So we're moving."
"To where?"
"Wherever I can find. Come on."
John paused.
"Come on,"
Narek hissed, snapping on the rope. John lurched, his neck jerked painfully.
"Look, Narek, my lord, I could help more than this."
Narek of the Word looked at him carefully.
"You are full of mind tricks and deceit, John Grammaticus, or Chiron Sebaton, or whoever else you ever are. Our business on Traoris taught me that."
John nodded.
"Yeah, I bloody am."
He ran an index finger around the inside of the noose to loosen it. "If I could escape from you, Narek, I would. There, I'm honest, at least. You are dangerous. You're never more than a few moments away from killing me, and you don't trust me. But this, Narek of the Word, this is not a good position for either of us to be in." John stepped towards the frowning word-bearer, oozing water rolled around his ankles. "There are worse allies to have than a space marine," he offered. "Just as there are worse allies to have than a Perpetual. Of course, that's true only if they get to work to their strengths. Take off the torque."
"No."
"Take it off."
"No," said Narek. "I am no fool. You are high function. You would blow out my brain with an aneurysm, with one thought blink, and leave me dead, or something."
John shrugged. "I suppose," he said, "though that would be worst case, and at least it would be quick."
"You could do that?" asked Narek.
"Of course I couldn't," John snapped. "I'm a telepath, not a telekine. I can do all sorts of things, Narek. I can read your mind or let you read mine, speak any language, be anyone I like, survey the area for psychana sensitivity, or even look into the ghostly filaments of the near past and near future, none of which sound like bad ideas right now. It would be good to have more immediate combat intel than something crashed so we had to run." Narek grunted.
"I could read disposition," said John. "I could tell you where the Ultramarines are. I could guide us. I could alert us to proximate activity. I could find what we're looking for." "You're dangerous," Narek whispered.
"So are you. And right now, my lord, I think leaving me hooded is making this situation even more dangerous than it has to be for both of us."
"I don't trust you," said Narek, clenching his steel-gloved fist around the rope to yank it again.
"I know," John replied, "but you want to use me as a weapon to assassinate your dear beloved Primarch, so I think you'll probably have to start trusting me at some point, or that's never ever going to become a practical possibility.
Weapons need love, respect, careful handling, and a chance to excel in their particular way. Ask your sword. Ask that ridiculously large damn rifle of yours.
John took a step closer. The rope between them slackened.
Narek, trust is the issue here. Let me open my mind. Let me allow us to see each other's thoughts. There's a lot of common ground, I think, more than you'd imagine. We're never going to be alike, you and me, but I think we're aligned.
Aligned? The word bearer asked, his voice very small and hollow.
Yes, we're in alignment. We're not like the hands of a clock at midnight. We're never going to point in the same direction, but think of the hands at 6 o'clock.
He paused.
You know what a clock is, right?
I've seen them, Narek nodded. He was more used to digital chronometer displays.
At 6 o'clock, the hands point in opposite directions, but they make a straight line, said John. They are in alignment.
I see.
Do you?
Narek nodded.
It is a metaphor for cooperation between two individuals who have conflicting aims but many common values.
Right. Shit, that's right. Narek hesitated.
I'm alone, he admitted eventually. I have turned against my legion. I have killed a certain number of my brothers, but my legion has turned, so I am an outsider to all others. No loyalist would ever trust me. No Imperial Fist or Iron Hand, and, since Kalth, no noble Ultramarine. I am cursed at every turn. All I can do is make amends. All I can do is cleanse and restore my legion, for it was once so great. It was beautiful, John Grammaticus. It was the truest expression of the Emperor's word.
I'm sorry for your loss, John said, and I'm not mocking you when I say that. You scare me half to death, Narek of the Word, but I admire you. The way Horus's war has played out, the brothers of the Word-bearers are on the wrong side. You've thrown yourselves in with darkness. So, understand me. I'm astonished by you, by your resilience and loyalty to the original high principles of your legion. The cosmos believes all Word-bearers to be traitors, heretics and rebels, but you, alone, have rebelled against their rebellion. I admire that. That's why I'm even considering helping you in your cause.
He shrugged.
But I wish you'd let me read you, so I could be sure the tale you're spinning me is true. The Word-bearers manipulate truth. Your story could simply be a way of obtaining me and the spear for Lorgar.
It is not.
Prove it.
Narek thought for a long time.
A comrade would be welcome on my lonely mission, he muttered. A battle brother, an ally, even a person in alignment.
Take off the torque, John said. Let's find out where we are. Let's get in alignment.
Narek paused.
I do not trust you, John Grammaticus, he said.
I know, John replied. But there's no one else here, and you need to trust someone.
Narek hesitated, and then reached out and removed the noose from around John's neck. He slung his cased rifle over his shoulder, took a breath, and drew his bolt pistol from his holster. He aimed the weapon at John, and with his other hand reached for the control stud on the side of the psychic torque. Narek pressed the stud. At a deep, psychic level, there was a local suspension of vibration. The aching dullness that had been hobbling John's hindbrain for hours began to dispel. It was an unpleasant, nauseating experience. John staggered and rested his hand against the wall of the storm drain. His mind was rapidly becoming aware of its environs, an overload of restored psychic feedback. Narek watched him warily. He unclasped the torque and handed it to John. John took it.
"Do not make me regret this," Narek said. "Oh, he won't," said a voice from behind them.
Narek turned with transhuman speed to locate the source of the voice. His pistol wavered, aiming, seeking a solid target. Daemon Prytanis stepped out from behind the curve of the brick-built drain, an oddly slovenly figure in his dirty fur coat. He had a shuriken pistol aimed in each hand.
"Sorry I'm late," he said brightly, and opened fire. "The Blessed Lady sends her regards."
Narek fired once, but projectiles had already punched into his hand, arm, and shoulder, and ruined his aim. The discharged bolt shell shot wild and struck the ceiling of the drain tunnel. Daemon's fusillade ripped across Narek, a blanket of whizzing monomolecular discs. Daemon Prytanis employed none of the feather-finger restraint he had used against the Precentals to conserve ammunition. This was a fully armoured space marine. The blitz of razor rounds shredded into Narek of the Word and explosively peppered the tunnel wall behind him. John had to dive into the ooze for cover.
"Johnny boy," Daemon yelled, still shooting. "Come to Papa. It's time to depart."
Narek went down into the sluice water, hurt and gagging, his plasteel fingertips scraping on the limed brick walls. John got up and staggered past him towards Daemon Prytanis.
"You bloody idiot," John yelled. "I had him. I had him right where I wanted him."
Daemon nodded.
"Right. Eating out of your hand. You'd virtually broken that torque's restraint, right? You are right in his head."
"No, I was negotiating. I had him. I was persuading him."
"Screw that," said Daemon. "Life's way too short. That's your trouble, John. You like to solve problems the hard way. You don't like to get wet. You're too genteel. Let's exit."
They started to run along the drain, side by side, towards the next outfall.
"What are you doing here?" John asked him.
He slowed his pace for a second and winced.
"What?" Daemon asked. "What's up?"
"My head. It's been blanked for too long. Everything's coming back. Perceptions? It's not pleasant. I asked you a question, Prytanis. What are you doing here?"
Daemon grinned.
"The usual. Gahead asked me to check you are performing according to schedule."
"You're my insurance?"
"Positively, yes."
"And if it looks like I'm falling down on the job?"
Daemon Prytanis shrugged, Guhru in one hand and Mechmenite in the other.
"Guess I'd just have to mess you up to teach you a lesson," he said.
Then he laughed.
"I'll tell you what you've messed up," said John, "this whole entire assignment. The Cabal should never have sent in the cavalry."
"Cavalry, am I? You know something? I actually was once. 7th Cavalry. Tell you what, those Lakota..."
"You know what I mean," said John.
"So do you. You know they had to," said Daemon. "You were wavering."
"I was not."
"You so were. This job needs to get done and done fast. Vulcan has to die. That's the way it has to go. That's the order of it all. You've got this spear thing?"
John gestured with the carry bag in his hand.
"Good," said Daemon. "Good for you. That's all that matters. Let's get this done. I'll be there as your support, your guarantee. So tell me, Johnny, how is this supposed to work?" Gahet was not specific.
"I place the spear in the hands of a Primarch, and in his hands that spear becomes capable of slaying another of the 18.
"Vulcan?"
"Yeah."
"Do we know why Vulcan is the target?"
"It's just another version of the Alpharius position," said John. "Horus has to win this war, and win it so brutally that the human race is engulfed and takes the taint of the primordial annihilator with it to its grave. The victory of Horus and the death of our species is the pyre that burns chaos out. That means major loyalist players like Vulcan must be turned or taken out."
"So the spear?" asked Daemon.
Which one of Vulcan's brothers do you give it to? I mean, here on McCrag. I don't see either Gilliman or the Lion being willing to take a pop at Vulcan.
There is one viable candidate on this world, said John Grammaticus.
There's another Primarch here? Who?
Kurz, said John.
Damon stopped and whistled.
Kurz! That maniac is on McCrag?
Yes, he is, said John. The last thing I sensed before the word-bearer captured me was the Night Haunter making planetfall.
Damon shuddered.
He looked up at the sewer roof.
Screw that. I didn't sign on for Conrad Kurz.
Well, Damon, let me put it this way, said John. Boo-hoo, too late. He didn't hear Prytanis' sardonic reply. A fierce migraine was knifing him suddenly, almost forcing him to his knees. Tears welled in his eyes.
John, what is it?
John Grammaticus' Psychana gift was suddenly returning in full force. The flooding rush of restored perceptions was almost overwhelming. He was registering the unmediated auras and perceptions of the Civitas around him. It was too much, like a vox floating between channels, its volume turned up full. He struggled to establish some control. He got sharp waves of pain, anger, outrage. He looked at Damon Prytanis.
I can feel, he tried to explain. My psyche's returning. Fast. Oh!
What?
It's a good thing we're not relying on Gilliman or the Lion, said John, struggling to maintain his wits.
Why? Damon asked warily.
Gilliman is gone. The Lion, too. They're dead, Prytanis.
Are you joking? Asked Damon. Tell me you're damn well joking.
I wish I was, John replied. He was shaking with the intensity of the psych rush. The sense of hurt and loss is so strong. I'm getting it from the minds of hundreds of ultramarines and dark angels.
Pull yourself together. Come on. If this is true, I need you sharp.
John swallowed hard and nodded.
Yes, right. I will, he mumbled. It's just a lot to deal with. You wouldn't understand. Imagine being deaf for a few hours, getting your hearing back, and then getting shouted at by everyone in a city all at once.
Damon maintained eye contact, concern on his face.
I'm all right, said John. It's becoming a little more stable now.
He glanced over his shoulder.
You didn't kill him, he said.
The word bearer?
Yes.
Damn, I thought I'd done that very nicely.
Well, you didn't, said John. I can read him. Getting back on his feet, he'll come after us. He's good at that, Damon.
We had better keep moving then, hadn't we? Said Damon.
They used a stone rain chute to clamber back up to street level. It was a few hours before dawn. The sky was heavy with air cover from the fortress.
That's a major search, said Damon.
Kurz ripped the heart out of the fortress tonight, John replied. They're hunting for him and for Vulcan.
Can you find either of them?
John paused, concentrating.
Kurz, no. It's as if I can read him sometimes, and then at other moments he's utterly invisible, as though he can cloak his mind. When I can read him, it's unbearable. But the rest of the time, he's not even a shadow.
What about Vulcan? Asked Damon.
Wait, I'm trying.
Well, we need them both, said Damon.
They walked slowly along a quiet back street between two grander avenues. John focused his mind. He had been attuning it to Vulcan's thought signature since setting foot on McCrag. It was hard when that thought signature was so deranged. It was also hard in the middle of a city filled with so many agitated, unguarded minds. He smiled.
What? Asked Damon.
I think I have Vulcan. He's moving south of us, southeast, going into Anomie Deem.
Damon nodded.
What's he doing there?
No idea. He's hard to read. He's not entirely sane these days.
Great. We're tracking a mad Primarch.
Yeah. Didn't the Cabal tell you that? Didn't Gahet brief you? I hope they gave you plenty of ammo and danger money.
Damon scowled. But you found him?
Yes.
Still no read on Kurz?
Not yet, said John.
Well, one of them is a start. Good job. Good job, John. You look pleased with yourself.
John was. Focusing on Vulcan's thought pattern had revealed something else to him. The enforced psychic isolation created by Narek's talk had allowed his brain to quietly, subconsciously, unpack. Suddenly he was able to see clearly what the Farseer's conduit had imprinted on his mind. He understood what Eldrad Ulthran wanted him to do. He understood how. He understood why. He took a deep breath. Finally, here was a way he could serve the forces of light. He could defy the wishes of the Cabal and fight for his birth race. At last, he could strike a proper blow for his species, something he had been longing to do since his Xenos masters first dragged him into the Horus War. Of course, it would cost him his life, but that hardly seemed a big price to pay. The pair of them straightened up and moved off down the street, following a route that Damon had dug up on a data slate, a route that would get them into Anami Deem by the shortest path. High up, on a jutting ornamental rainspout, a crouching shadow watched them move. Kurz licked his lips. This piece was a fascinating new addition to the spilled jigsaw of his mind. From the moment he had stepped out of the Nymphean pool, new visions had been coming to him. The crazed random flow of his waking dreams had shown him a possibility called John Grammaticus. There was something curious about Grammaticus. Kurz wasn't sure what it was exactly, but it was creepy and abnormal. Grammaticus was not a regular human. He was somehow like many humans all at once, or like a single human with inexplicable dimensional proportions. In particular, his fourth dimension, his time, was stretched, elongated. It didn't matter. The latest reflections had shown Kurz one especially clear thing. There was a spear. A spear that could kill Vulcan. Not only that, Grammaticus was supposed to give the spear to Kurz so he could use it. He would use it. He would use it to finish what he had started in the Iron Labyrinth. It would make the night perfect. Sunrise would reveal that Conrad Kurz had descended like an eclipse upon bright Macragge, and in one period of darkness had slain three of the Emperor's sons, including the one that apparently could not die. That was a fundamental achievement, a superlative ritual achievement, a crushing achievement. Haughty Gilliman, the vainglorious lion, the unkillable Vulcan. All three in one single night. Horus could go burn in the warp. Nothing he had achieved was even half so impressive. Conrad Kurz was about to anoint himself as the Emperor's greatest and most formidable son. He would do it by bringing his father's Imperium crashing down more thoroughly and painfully than anything that the Lupercal had so far managed. He would do it by bringing about not a change of state or leadership, but utter galactic oblivion. They would die. All of the Primarchs would die. And in dying, they would witness the sheer magnificence of his terror. Kurz rose. The two men on the empty street below him hurried out of sight. He spread his tattered cloak and launched himself towards the next rooftop.